I'm passing out this excerpt from Rabbi Felder's Sefer for the sake of clarity. Very often after Halacha L'Maaseh Shir, sometimes some of the finer points are not as clear as you want them to be. So that, I thought that to assure clarity, we would all have this text, which is a very, very fine review of the halachos of the 3 weeks and the 9 days, compiled or put together by Rabbi Aaron Felder, who was a long-standing Talmud of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. A lot of the issues that come up during the 9 days and the 3 weeks are not clearly addressed with the Tanakh. Shulchan Aruch often discusses models and examples of ideas. That's why this is particularly valuable in this area of halacha. And by having this as a guide, so we'll be able to discuss some of the broader issues. We'll be able to organize the halacha, so we'll hopefully have a deeper understanding of the halachas of the 9 days and 3 weeks. And by having a deeper understanding, we'll be able to achieve what we want to achieve. We want to make sure that the 9 days and the 3 weeks, there are many, many restrictions on behaviors and the things that we do. But we want to make sure that the period of time does not remain just a period of time where we behave a little bit differently, a period of time where we are a little bit more restricted. We want to make sure that the behaviors that we adopt, that we refrain from, so they ultimately lead to an emotional state which ultimately will put us in a position where when we daven for the return of the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim, those tefillos will be much more engaging of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what the Mishnah Berurah points out when it comes to a fast day. The Mishnah Berurah says that the person who fasts from morning till night, but then spends most of the day doing things that are not consistent with the events of the fast day, so tofsu es hatofel v'nichu es ha'ikur. So they've taken the secondary issue. The fasting is for it. It's supposed to accomplish something. It's supposed to put us in a frame of mind. It's supposed to give us something to think about. And if a person does the behavior, but is unsuccessful in grasping some of the what the behavior is supposed to accomplish, so we've lost the forest and they grabbed onto the trees. The same thing is certainly true for the 3 weeks and the 9 days. Now, when it comes to the 3 weeks, the core. Really, the way the halacha develops, the core issue over here is that the Gemara says that Shavuot Shechol Bo, the week in which Tisha B'Av falls, so that week is a week where we are misabel, where we're mourning. But we're probably all familiar with the Rav's way of describing this period of time. The Rav used to describe that on Tisha B'Av itself, a Jew is sitting Shiva, that during the 9 days, a Jew is in Shloshim, and during the 3 weeks, a person is in Yud Beis Chodesh. The Rav used to describe that the Tisha B'Av itself, Tisha B'Av itself is split into two parts. The morning of Tisha B'Av, because the Shiva, Rachman al-Islam, the 7 days of Shiva are also broken into two parts. The first 3 days of a Shiva are much more intense. The first 3 days of Shiva are referred to as Yimei Bechi, days of crying, when one isn't really open to any kind of Nechama or consolation. In fact, it used to be, we don't practice this nowadays, but it used to be that people would not visit during the first 3 days of Shiva. The first 3 days of Shiva only for family and extremely close friends. And then it says in the Svarim that people who are not extremely close, the person sitting Shiva, would not visit for the first 3 days. They would put it into the last 2 or 3 days. Because it depends on when Shabbos was, last 4 days. And the reason being is because the first 3 days are an overbearing time emotionally, and that's the way it's supposed to be. So the practice has changed in our time. I think primarily because of the distances which Jews have, we don't really have that flexibility. It's hard for us to say that I'm going to catch the Shiva in the last 4 days, especially if one of them is a Shabbos, and the last day doesn't really count because it's only in the morning. So you're often reduced to two days. So because of the distance that we traveled in order to attend the Shiva, so we've gone soft on focusing on the first 3 days as being something that's really intense and very, very private. But there are other examples also. For example, let's say a person is in a business situation whereby if he's not involved, so his business will fall apart, it'll unravel. So then, during the first 3 days, we would still tell him that he can't do anything. During the last 4 days, in that kind of situation, the Ovel can get somewhat involved. So the first 3 days are the most intense, and that's Tisha B'Av morning. And then the balance of Tisha B'Av is the end of the Shiva, so to speak. And then the 9 days are the period of Shloshim, and the and that's why the restrictions on washing and on bathing. And then the 3 weeks are, the Rav used to describe, are the Yud Beis Chodesh, the 12 months. That one is Miss Abel for a parent, Rachmana Litzlan. But the Rav took this approach because, and this is a very significant debate in amongst Rashi Yeshivas, amongst Poskim as well. And that is that when one has a minhag, when there's some custom, does the custom have to be modeled after some halacha? Can the custom really hang on to various behaviors? So the Rav was of the opinion, this goes back to the Vilna Gaon and became a very prominent position amongst the Lithuanian Rashi Yeshivas, that there is no such thing as a minhag, as a custom, which is not modeled after some idea which we found in Torah before. Just like we have a rule that the Rabbon and the rabbis cannot establish a behavior which we don't find in Torah. Whatever the Rabbanan do, so it has to be modeled after a din deraisa. In other words, if this behavior is something that makes sense in Avodas Hashem, so the Rabbanan Chazal can extend it and can apply it a little bit differently. So the approach of the Rav was the same thing is true for a minhag. You have a minhag, after all, the truth is a minhag Yisrael. So the Rav held that you can't simply have a period of time where we say, well, we shouldn't get married, and men should not take haircuts, and men shouldn't shave. That's a strange approach. It's a strange minhag. It doesn't add up to anything. Why would Klal Yisrael do that? So the Rav suggested, well, the closest match we have is the 12 months, because the 12 months is when a person cannot get married, right? A person cannot attend really a simcha meireyos, right? And that's why the Rav defined the 3 weeks around this idea of Beis Chodesh. So the Rav's approach was that just as a person, Rachmana Litzlan, would conduct themselves during the 12 months mourning for a parent, that's how they conduct themselves during the 3 weeks, which yielded a chumrah and a kula. Right? The chumrah, the stringency was that it doesn't just mean weddings, it means any party, any simcha meireyos, any time when the festivity, when people enjoy being together and are partying together. And it yielded an interesting flashpoint between the Rav and Rav Reish, who disagreed with this approach, was going to baseball games. That the Rav was quoted as saying that we cannot go to a baseball game because apparently the excitement, if you're a fan, and the excitement in the crowd when it builds up to a point where one is enjoying the event to a greater extent because there are more people there. One's enjoying the event to a greater extent because one's sitting amongst fans and cheering on. See, that's Simcha Meireyos. And therefore the Rav expanded the whole idea of not getting married to not doing anything, not having any kind of attending any kind of party at all. On the other hand, the Rav's approach yielded a very significant leniency, and that is that that men are allowed to men who shave are allowed to shave during the 3 weeks. Why? Because during the Yud Beis Chodesh, in the 12 months, halacha is that a person has to let their hair grow until people say, you look pretty grungy, you look pretty unkempt. So nowadays we assume that a person is shaved, so within 2 days, 3 days, they already look unkempt, and then they're allowed to shave for the rest of the Beis Chodesh. So that's what the Rav's approach was, that one is allowed to shave during the 3 weeks. On the other hand, he was stricter when it came to any form of partying. And Rav Moshe and many, many other poskim didn't accept the Rav's tight approach that a minhag has to be based on some model that appears before. They understood that a minhag can pick up behaviors as long as those behaviors were somewhere found in halacha. So not shaving, not taking a haircut is found somewhere in halacha, that you have some reference to it, it fits in somewhere in avelos. Not getting married, right? As far as halacha is concerned, the avel can get married during the 12 months. So he hasn't been married before, but he wouldn't get married, let's say, during Shiva, even during Shloshim, we wouldn't. It's also a discussion amongst the poskim. So Rav Moshe, now you can have different behaviors. And this machlokas played itself out many, many times. But in the 3 weeks, that's why Rav Moshe was more lenient when it came to Simcha Merayos. He didn't see that it was an overwhelming definition, that you have to limit yourself from going to any possible party at all. And on the other hand, he held that a person who would not lose out significantly by not shaving should not shave during the 3 weeks. Why do I use that phrase, not lose out significantly? Because every time we have a minug, so that means that the Jews accepted this on their own. So we have to assume that the Jews did not accept minhagim if it was to the great detriment of individuals. So we have to assume that Klal Yisrael didn't accept the minug to the extent that I should lose my job, I should not be able to have a parnasa. If it's a deraisa, deraisa could easily challenge a parnasa. If it's a bona fide din derabanan, then they would also can challenge it. But a minug is hard to say that Klal Yisrael would take on it. So the minug must have been more flexible. It must have allowed a person to have a parnasa. So that's why Rav Moshe says that during the 3 weeks, if a person is afraid that they'll lose their job, then they're allowed to shave during the 3 weeks. But that's how they came to these different conclusions. But that the Rav's approach gives us this sort of overarching model. Different forms of avelos. And what we're going to discuss tonight is a different approach. The approach that we'll see that the various behaviors that we have, that we refrain from during the 9 days, the 3 weeks, so they're not only tied up with avelos. There are many other factors that had impacted upon the 3 weeks and the 9 days, and that's what gives us our what we're trying to accomplish now. Go ahead.
No haircut jive with the rug could be kind of a haircut.
So the assumption is that I assume the rug would also say that if a person would look so unkempt during the 3 weeks, that he can't wait till Tisha B'av, he probably also would be makel in that case. Right? It's just that practically it's rare.
The structure, if they were basing it on that minhag, why would they introduce haircuts at all?
So no, because also you'd be chodesh, a person cannot get a haircut.
Oh really? Oh,
yeah. But if a person came into shiva with very, very short hair, and it could be that it could be that he can't get a haircut right after shloshim. Could take 3 or 4 months if he's very short hair, right? In fact, that's why there are several people that if they come into shiva ready with a beard, but a trimmed beard, then they won't trim their beard for Yerbez Chodesh. Because they feel that whether their beard is trimmed or untrimmed is not such a Yigur v'chaveiro. Again, it depends on how closely it's trimmed. You'll see sometimes Rabbanim who have beards, so they won't trim it during the entire Yerbez Chodesh, because they'll feel that that's not, they don't look that much more unkempt than another way. Okay, so the if we think about the practices of the 3 weeks and 9 days, so we could divide the various things that we do into 4 different categories, I think. One category is that that the Gemara says it's a bad time. This is something that we have to look at carefully because it sounds like superstition. The Gemara says that during the 9 days, man dehava ledina im nachri, a person who has a judgment, who has litigation with a non-Jew, don't do it during the 9 days. Wait till after the 9 days. Some say even after Tu B'Av, but we generally practice till after 9 days. If a person has, Rachmanos has to have some kind of surgery. So if the surgery is emergency surgery, and pushing it off in any way compromises a person's health, then you have to do it right away. But if pushing off the surgery does not in any way compromise a person's health, so we don't do it during the 9 days. Right? That is because the 9 days are seen as Reya Mazla. In fact, the 3 weeks as well. Post will discuss why can't you get married in the 3 weeks. Allah says if a person has not been married yet, doesn't have a boy and a girl, and has not yet been the kind of mitzvah of Pirvei Rivia, they're allowed to get married during Yud Beis Chodesh, and they could even get married during Shlosha. The truth is, from the strict halacha, we don't practice this, but one could get married according to some positions even during Shiva, because the mitzvah of getting married, of having children, overrides the avelus. So the same thing should be true for the 3 weeks, and certainly for Sfira, that if a person doesn't have children yet, they should be able to get married. The mitzvah of Purur Vu should override any minug. It's hard to imagine that a minug would push off Purur Vu. And in fact, the Gemara points out that we are always concerned Shemik Menu Acher. A person, thank you very much. That we have to be concerned that a person could daven very, very hard and they could chat my shirach. So I could be, it's an interesting discussion for another time how the shirach works. But the Gemara says that the person is allowed to get married in these times because Shem Yikedmenu Achav, to be afraid that if I don't chat the moment now, so the Gemara says, how could that be? Then a Kadosh Baruch Hu work things out. But Shem Yikedmenu Achav B'Tfila, a person could daven very, very hard and could get an upgrade. And he couldn't, doesn't he get to shidduch? That's really more than he's roi for. And this other young man could lose their shidduch. So mi'ikar adin, a person should be allowed to get married in the 3 weeks. So the post can point out that's correct. As far as the halacha is concerned, you could get married in the 3 weeks. But reya mazlei, we don't begin new things because the 3 weeks are seen as not a great time, not a time for important beginnings. Something which requires the Kadosh Baruch Hu's protection and guidance, requires the Kadosh Baruch Hu's nurturing, so not during the 3 weeks. We don't start it. And that's why we have a minhag not to get married during the 3 weeks. That's why Svarim point out that a family should not move into a new house during the 3 weeks. Because such important things have to happen in that house, so that's when we move into a new home, so that we have such important tefillos that the important thing should happen in that house, the Shalom Bayis and the Simcha and the Chinuch and the Shemiras HaMitzvahs. So therefore, it's Reya Mazla. It's not a good time to move into a new house. That applies the entire 3 weeks. Again, we start off by saying that, and this is a little bit hard to define, we start off by saying that during the 9 days, a person, we say, it's Reya Mazla. It has not been a good time for us. And therefore, a person does not enter into any kind of litigation with a non-Jew, and therefore a person would not accept any additional risk during the 9 days. A person wouldn't do something which they otherwise don't normally. We are allowed to accept a certain amount of risk. It's an ongoing question. How can you say that during the 9 days you can't take on more risk? Why are we taking, and then when it's not during the 9 days, we are allowed to take on more risk? That's a strange thing, but that's halacha. We take on risk all the time. When we drive, we take on risk. We're always taking on risks. So, but a risk which people broadly accept, that's mutter. A risk which is more than what I normally accept. My lifestyle has accepted a certain level of risk. I don't normally accept a greater kind of risk, so I would not do that during the 9 days, even though it's generally mutter. Right? A person cannot take on a risk that's also. Right. A person cannot do something which most people don't do because they think it's risky. That you can't do ever. So how can you say, well, in the 9 days, what becomes mutter? What becomes also the vinyan siyan? Yaakov Edlinger asked the question. He said, how can a person bench gomel? A person benches gomel, so they're saying, they're getting up and saying, Baruch Hashem, Kodesh Baruch Hu saved me from a life-threatening situation. Gomel achayav tovos. So he said, how can a person do that? Who allowed him to go in a situation to begin with? If you really think that going in this boat was a life-threatening situation, and you get up the shul and say, "Hagomel achayov, because Baruch Hu saved my life," so who said you can go in the boat to begin with? You know, the fella. So how can you have both ways to evacuate? And they said, "No. Halacha is that going on the boat that is an acceptable risk because people do that. That's mutter." All right. Now, Nevertheless, there was an additional risk to the way I normally live my life. There was a real risk in an upgraded risk. So when I come back, there's Baruch Hu took care of me, guided me. So we can say the bracha. A risk that most people don't accept, that's also. Can't binge gomel, you can't binge gomel, you can't accept it to begin with. A risk that people normally accept, you can take on, and you binge gomel afterward. When it comes to Tisha B'Av, we don't take on risks that we don't normally take on. So if, for example, let's say a person is not flying around all the time. A person is not a businessman that's flying every single day. A person flies for vacations, flies for trips and so on, so he wouldn't fly during the 9 days. That's an additional risk beyond the way that we normally live our lives. Right? Just like a court case, litigation. A person goes into litigation, but there's an additional risk when you go into litigation. So not during the 9 days. During the 3 weeks, we are allowed to fly, we are allowed to take on additional risk. We live in that school, we live more or less normally. A person is allowed to have elective surgery during the 3 weeks. During the 3 weeks, we say a person should not begin something which requires a Kadosh Baruch Hu's great protection, like getting married and like having a new home. So that's how we understand it. The Shulchan Aruch writes at the very end of Hilchos 9 days, Tav Kuf Nun Aleph, Shulchan Aruch says that a person should not. There's two things one shouldn't do during 3 weeks. One, I don't say at all. One is walking alone during certain hours of the day, that's Alpi Kabbalah, we don't understand that. And the other is a teacher should not hit their Talmidim. At flashbacks, the olden days, when the Talmud made a line, so the teacher was allowed to give the kid a patch. So during the 3 weeks, the teacher should not give a child a patch. So at first it sounds a little bit strange. It sounds like that one cannot impose this additional risk. Is that what a teacher is doing? That's very scary. And a teacher, when he passes a child, is introducing a greater risk. We're afraid the teacher is going to start pounding away at the child. It's like human. It's hard to imagine. So I thought that perhaps it's the following. There's a phrase that we say, Ein oda maka ela talmido ubino. The only people that we give a patch to is our children and our students. Now it's only children, and even that's going to get a start. So the point is, if I would hit somebody else's Talmud, if I would hit somebody else's child, that's a terrible thing. That's a terrible violation. Like whatever. If I'm a parent, so sometimes Rav Volbi says it's called first aid. Sometimes to catch a moment one may have to give a little patch to a child, because you can't always sit down and explain everything to a child. Sometimes you have to redirect him. So it requires a little bit of patch on the spot. So like first aid, something has to be done right away. So however, even in a very, very pressed situation, a crisis, so it would be terribly inappropriate for another parent to in any way touch somebody else's child. But ain't on the makel lebeno talmida. It's only my own child that I have that approach. Part of what's happened during the 3 weeks is that the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a patch. He gave us many patches. Shavuos v'tammuz, there were 5 crises, Tisha B'Av. The Churban Bayis from Shavuos v'tammuz till Tisha B'Av was done every day. Things were getting worse and worse in Yerushalayim. So during the 3 weeks, as terrible as it is, and if we look at it as a patch from the Kadosh Baruch Hu, it says everything. And when it says that how terrible we must have acted, that a parent would throw a child out of one's home, Gemara says that when a Jew says Yeshmei Rabba, the Gemara says that the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Oy lebonim shehiglam al shulchan aviyim. How terrible it is for a child to be thrown away from their parents' table. Oy leomim shehiglam b'nai mishulchanam. But how terrible it is for a parent to send a child away. And for a parent to send a child away, that a parent puts up with everything that a child does. Right? So Kadosh Baruch was saying, you can imagine how bad the thing must have been, how offended I must have been if I'm a parent and I sent my kids away from Yerushalayim. So the 3 weeks on one end catches, because we look at it as if we're getting, we got a patch from Kadosh Baruch Hu, so on one end we look at it as we're really way off course. And it gives us an understanding of the severity of what happened. On the other hand, it also is the beginning of the tikkun. It's the beginning of the nechama, of the comfort. Because sof, it was our parent who gave us the patch. So if it's the parent who gives us the patch, so you understand that the relationship is still there, that he wants to establish a relation once again, that he's looking out for us. So what I was thinking is perhaps that's why the Shulchan Aruch says one doesn't give a patch in the 3 weeks. Because during the 3 weeks, we suffered so much because of the patch. So we remind ourselves exactly how we should be feeling during 3 weeks. We refrain from that. But I don't think that's because I'm an additional sakana. So again, so the way it works out is that the 9 days are seen as a day we don't take on extra risk, extra sakana. And the 3 weeks are a period of time in which it's not a good time. All right, now, the question is, why is this different than Friday the 13th? And if a person says, I'm not going to go to litigation on Friday the 13th, he says, Nisa de Raisa. The person says, I don't go to a closing on Friday the 13th. Also, it's probably Nisa de Raisa. Service said, listen, anyone else supposed to figure out their good times and bad times, and this is a bad time, therefore we don't do things. That'd be also a superstition. So apparently, when a Kadosh Baruch Hu defines a day as being a bad day, That's not superstition. That's not, the Ramchal writes, this is, the Derech Hashem writes, the Derech Hashem says that Torah looks at certain days as having different kinds of kohos, different kinds of energies or identities. When we say during the month of Nisan that these days have a propensity to bring about Geula, we're saying is that the Ribbono Shel Olam charged these days with a special koach, a special power, and we can tune into that power by being mispalo for geula. And when we say that, and the best raya for this is Shabbos. Why? Because it's Shabbos. We say Torah says in Brachos, "Vayivorech vayikadosh." We say during Kiddush, because Baruch Hu blessed Shabbos and is mekadosh Shabbos. So the Rashi says, how do we understand that? He blessed Shabbos because he gave double mon erev Shabbos, or the mon recreated itself on Shabbos. He sanctified it by not giving mon on Shabbos. Right, so you see that a Kadosh Baruch Hu planted in the day of Shabbos a certain special koyach. Kadosh Baruch Hu determined that the cycle of mon that will come down every single day doesn't come down on Shabbos. And the Gemara says that, this once heard this from Rabbi Reuven Feinstein when he came to town, he said that the Gemara says that that our budget is determined from Rosh Hashanah. Whatever money we're going to make from in Tov, Shin, Samech, Hey was determined last Rosh Hashanah, with three exceptions. One is Haitzos. That's why Rashi says that a person can splurge during Elul. The person shouldn't splurge before El. When it comes to El, Rashi says, the person has some extra kniyot to make, El is a good time, because you're ready. That's when the budget is getting, if you're actually made to El already, you still have funding, it means that you're still in the black, it's a good sign. But the Gemara says, chutzmi hotzos, except for tuition, that which we pay for our children's education, and hotzos Shabbos or Yom Tov. We spend in Shabbos and Yom Tov. Whatever we spend in Shabbos and Yom Tov, the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Levua alive and Ipereya. It's on my cheshbon, my budget. So I can always explain, it doesn't mean that a person who eats chicken every day can order venison for Shabbos. Probably doesn't mean that you can go way out of your bracket. But if a person spends a little bit more in Shabbos and Yom Tov, Kadosh Baruch Hu picks up the tab. How does Kadosh Baruch Hu pick up the tab? It's one of these things that you have to believe, you can never prove. You can never prove why Kadosh Baruch Hu gave you a mitzvah. So sometimes a person will find money, a person will get an extra contract, a person will get an extra gift. Some Rishonim say a person will find Ramesha mitzvah. So sometimes extra money comes up. That is the money that we spent in Shabbos and Yom Tov. So you see that Kadosh Baruch Hu is willing to allow Shabbos to affect the way nature works. When when I get an extra contract, when I get an extra source of income, so that didn't was not literally money that the Kadosh Baruch Hu dropped from Minishmaim, but it was the Kadosh Baruch Hu worked it out that through the Derech HaTeva, what I spent on Shabbos will come back to me. So you see that the Kadosh Baruch Hu was allowed, the Kadosh Baruch Hu was made certain days and has given them various powers and energies that are unique to those days. That's what Ramchal sees every single Shabbos and Yom Tov. We're supposed to tie into certain powers that Kadosh Baruch Hu invested. So similarly, if the Kadosh Baruch Hu said that Tish B'Av is a Yom Tzara, is a difficult day, the day when we had so many different problems come day after day, so year after year. So Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying that that's what it means, that it's a time when the sort of the energies of that day, to use the modern term, are not working in our favor. So therefore, during the 9 days, a person avoids any extra kindness. Now the truth is that this is true for a family, Rachmanel Son, if they're in Yud Beis Chodesh. During Yud Beis Chodesh, in the 12 months that a person is sitting shiva, that the person is being misable for a parent, they're not supposed to take on any additional unusual risk. They shouldn't be traveling, and they shouldn't. That's one of the halachas. The Gemara says that when a family suffers like that, so that means that there is a din out. Kadosh Baruch Hu is concerned about that family. So during that, those Yud Beis Chodesh, again, Rachmanel Tzlan, the person has to be careful not to take on any additional risk. The same kind of a din. That's one of the reasons we don't say Shechayanu during 3 weeks. Shechayanu, we don't say it for one of two reasons. Either because we should not be doing the things that generate a Shechayanu, right? We shouldn't be, we buy a new outfit and it gives us simcha, so we shouldn't have a simcha during the 3 weeks. So we should make last the 3 weeks. Right? Or the other reason, why, let's say we have a new piece of furniture. So the simcha that we have by purchasing a new piece of furniture, having delivered, that simcha we shouldn't have during the 3 weeks. The other reason is because since it's not a good time, how can you say Shechayanu v'kimonu v'gimel? Zman hazeh? We're saying Shechayanu means we're thanking the Kadosh Baruch Hu for bringing us to this time. So when we have a Yom Tov, or let's say we have a new fruit, we thank the Kadosh Baruch Hu for bringing us to this season once again. We have the Yom Tov comes again. We thank Kadosh Baruch Hu for giving us life to come to this Yom Tov once again. But we come to the 3 weeks, how can we say, thank you, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Shechayanu v'kimenu l'zman hazeh? It's not a good zman, it's a bad zman. It's not a good time. All right, so on one end, we're obviously happy that Kadosh Baruch Hu has given us life to come to the year once again, but we would want this period of time ready to be a good time ready. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to make it into a time of simcha. So not saying Shechayanu comes from, according to many Meforshim, comes from the, because it's a bad time. That's what Rav Moshe writes, that if a person does purchase, Rav Moshe was asked, can a person purchase a car during the 3 weeks? So Rav Moshe said, one is allowed to. Why? Because, not during the 9 days, but during the 3 weeks. Because when one purchases a car, so one does not, if one purchases a small car, if there is such a thing, a private car, sports car, I don't know, so then one says, Shechayanu. A person who purchases a van, that's already good for oneself and one's family. A person purchases a four-seater, four-door car, whatever. So one's purchasing the car, not just for oneself. So then the bracha you say then is a tov ha-metiv. When I buy a new outfit, it's just for me, I say Shechayanu. When I buy a new sofa, a new couch, so it's for the whole family, say Kadosh Baruch Hu is a tov. He did good things, va-metiv, and he allows me to do good things for others as well. So Rav Moshe said, if the bracha is Shechayanu, you can't say that, because that's thank you Kadosh Baruch Hu for coming to this time. But if it's a tov ha-metiv, you can say thank you Kadosh Baruch Hu for doing good things for us, and for allowing us to do good things for other people as well. But that's why the Rav Moshe came up with this mahalach again during the 3 weeks, which would not apply during the 9 days. Because it's a difficult time, because it's a Yom Tzara, so therefore, there are many practices, and here is where the Avelos and the Yom Tzara sort of meld together. And the Gemara has the following story. The Gemara says that, the Gemara has in Tainus, that in the times when the Eretz Yisrael, we hope to get rain by the beginning of Cheshvan. Let's say a person, let's say rain didn't come at the beginning of Cheshvan, so then they would have a public time, it's a public fast day. And there are three fast days. And if they still didn't get rain, so then they would then have three more fast days. Those new three fast days were fast days that were 24-hour fast days, and fast days just like Yom Kippur. There was no, obviously, no eating and drinking. There was no bathing. There was no sicha, with anything with oils. So you see from that Gemara tremendous insight that abstaining from all of these things is sometimes a sign of mourning, and sometimes it's the way that we try to focus ourselves to have a day of tefillah, to have a day of davening. So the important thing to realize is that during the 9 days, this doesn't mean part of the 3 weeks, but during the 9 days, these are the 3 weeks, so we don't have simcha mreyas, we don't go to weddings, we don't have weddings, we don't, men don't shave, we don't take haircuts, we refrain from saying shechayonu, or doing the things which would yield the shechayonu. During the 9 days, that's when we reduce, we refrain from washing clothes. We're allowed to wash clothes that continue to get dirty. We're allowed to wash children's clothes, and we're allowed to wash undergarments and things that become sweaty. So that's not seen as giving a person any kind of great pleasure. Right? So when you wash a baby's clothing, and you know that, tomorrow you have to wash the same clothing once again, so you don't get any great simcha by having a child wearing this brand new, this almost brand new, this thing which looks so clean. A person, when you bring something back from the cleaners, so then you feel good that your outfit looks good, that it's well pressed. Person washes something and it looks good, and there's a skirt or a pants, a sweater. There's a certain simcha that a person gets when it looks good, when it looks clean, looks well pressed. So that's how we refrain from it, God forbid, during our Avelus and during a Yom Tzara. Things where having new ones don't give us that much simcha, a clean towel, clean child's clothes. So that was allowed to wash during the 9 days. Same thing with the bathing. So we reduce the amount of bathing. Again, it depends. That's what you have in front of you. You have on. Page 133. We have one, beginning with 132. Number 14 describes how a person should bathe during the 9 days. That's why we refrain from swimming during the 9 days. There was a practice, which I don't know where it comes from, and I was very gratified that when I was reviewing the halachas this time round, I saw that other sforim say they don't know where this comes from. There was a practice that people did not swim before the 3 weeks, would not swim during the 3 weeks. That in many bungalow colonies, people tell me there was a rush to swim before Shavuos or Tammuz. So I don't know where that comes from. I don't think one has to worry about that practice. It's a strange, strange practice. But during the 9 days, so swimming is a form of chitza shalana, and of bathing with time, like enjoying bathing. That's why Rav Moshe was making with the younger children, allowing them. You have to be concerned below the age of six, you don't worry about it at all. And between six and bar mitzvah and bas mitzvah, so we would allow them you can't really take cold showers we can't take cold showers, but you can take cold showers that are somewhat tempered by warm, just as cool as one can stand. Not a hot shower, but a lukewarm shower. And swimming also, we would be makel with kids. I think at some point we should introduce, because of chinuch, we should start training kids not to swim during the 9 days when they get close to bar bas mitzvah. Clearly, for medical reasons, a person can shower normally and for tefillah. And then during a heat wave, a person gets very, very sweated, so a person can also take a shower that will reduce one's discomfort and aggravation. and the person continuously gets dirty because of their employment, they're allowed to bathe whatever is necessary to take away the dirt. So these are all halachas that come because the 9 days are days of shloshim, and also because they are days of tzara. And this is one of the ways in which a Klal Yisrael move themselves to be misfalo with greater intensity. And that's one of the things that we have to keep in mind during this period of time. To keep in mind that it's times of availus of mourning, so that we're very sort of aware of. But it's not just days of mourning. It's the days of davening and days of tefillah. The practice that we have, not bathing, not washing clothing, the way that, and the truth is, here's some other important orders here as well, that we sometimes, he writes, just like that during the 9 days also, we're less concerned with the way we look, we also are less concerned with the way one's house looks. That during the 9 days, except for Erev Shabbos, someone would not work hard to keep the house so clean. During the 9 days, we let the house go a little bit. During the Erev Shabbos, then we pick up the house. Rav Moshe writes it when it comes to gardening as well, that during the 9 days, one should not tend to the, what we call landscaping, for the same reason. But the idea of Avelus and Yom Tzarim is that these things are not so important to us. We let them go a little bit during the 9 days. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
The kids that, when they're getting things dirty all the time, right, while the child is still continuously dirtying their clothes, it depends on the child. Yeah. Certainly a toddler, right? That's for sure. After that, it depends. It depends what the kids are doing. So it could be also if a kid is outside all the time, right? So then their clothes get filthy right away. So then, because that's the point. You can't really give a shear. The point is that if, when I wash these clothing, I don't feel any great sense of satisfaction afterward. I'm not excited that they're staying clean. Because I know it's just a very temporary situation. They're going to get filthy right away. It applies to the things which continuously get dirty. Big Day Zaya, for example. Right, that's why Big Day Zaya undergarments are also. Rav Moshe writes, this is a very big chiddush. Rav Moshe writes that shirts are any clothing which gets sweated up. So Rav Moshe writes that shirts are Big Day Zaya, but certainly sweatshirts and sweatpants, all these things, because wearing something clean, that category doesn't give one any sense of simcha mashe. And again, if a person wears a new suit and it's just came out of the cleaners, or a new sweater, a new skirt came out of the cleaners, so then a person feels good about it.
So the laundry, is that only the laundry that you're allowed to do? That's only if you need it for the 9 days. Meaning undergarments, children's clothing, you can only do it if you're going to need it.
I think that
like
right, it's not the tzarech, it's correct. I think that if the children's clothing, the little kids' clothing, that you're allowed to wash. Undergarments you're allowed to wash. And then why a person wouldn't want to do it if they didn't last the 9 days, I'm not sure, but
well, they don't
it piled around the house. Okay, that makes sense.
And also, what's the difference between towels and sheets? Because according to this, you use towels, but you can't change your sheets.
I think because he sees towels getting dirty more frequently. Just every time you, by using hand towels, they get dirty all the time. I think that's why he would say that the towels, since they're continuously getting dirty, they're like children's clothing. And then, when it comes to the, then there's a fourth source of halachas during the 9 days and 3 weeks. And that is, and this again, this applies to the three, to some extent as well, and that is specific practices that are established with Zechar Mikdash, to remind ourselves of Beis Mikdash. So for example, not eating meat or wine in the 9 days. So part of that is because meat and wine is a form of simcha, form of people are happier when they can eat meat and wine. But the primary reason that we refrain from eating meat and wine during the 9 days is because we should not feel comfortable eating meat when there's no meat being brought on the Mizbeach. The Gemara says at the end of the third parak of Avastra, the Gemara says that when Yerushalayim was destroyed, the Prushim, the rabbinic group, they decided they're no longer going to eat meat. They will never have meat until there's a new Beis Mikdash. They explained, if there's no meat on the Rebbeinu Shel Mizbeach, so how can we enjoy meat? So there was a more sobering group there and said, if that's the case, so you should not have bread. Right? And they said they shouldn't have wine. They shouldn't have wine. Because they used to bring wine every korban. So they said, you're right. No more wine. Kiddush will figure out, but no more wine. Then they said, if that's the case, you shouldn't have bread. Because the korban mincha, the flour offering was frat than every single korban. They said, you're right. So no cakes, no bread. They said, if that's the case, you can't have water. Because in Sukkos, he's giving water on the Mizbeach. So then the Prushim caved in. I said, you're right. The point being, a person can be driven by mourning literally driven to distraction. A person can be driven by mourning to have no interest at all in what's going on in the world. And the Prushim felt that way. If there's no Mikdash, no Mizbeach, so Shvaruch was not concerned about us. So then there was no value to moving on. So that's what they were pointing out to the Prushim. That's not what's happening. So you have to figure out other ways of remembering Beis HaMikdash. But this isn't appropriate. However, during the 9 days, we did adopt the approach of the Prushim. During the 9 days, we say, if Kadosh Baruch Hu's Mizbeach cannot enjoy meat, so how can we enjoy meat? If Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have the Nisachim, the libation set, what does it mean to us? So that's really the source of the practice of not having wine or meat during the 9 days. And even the practice here also, many of these things are not as clear, not so clear. The halacha is that one should not make new clothes during the 9 days. One shouldn't sew new clothes, one shouldn't weave new clothes. So even that, the source for it is not so clear. It comes from two sources. One source is that in weaving there's always a warp and a woof and a warp. There's a crisscross. And in halacha those are called shesi ve'eruv. And the Gemara says we don't do a shesi ve'eruv because we lost the em and hashsiya. It was a play on words. We lost the basis for the aron called the em and hashsiya, so we don't do a shesi ve'eruv. Other Svarim point out that was just a play on words. And the idea is we don't make new clothing. We don't, that's why we wouldn't, again, we wouldn't sew, we wouldn't weave, we wouldn't crochet. We do expand it beyond just weaving that we would not do during the 9 days because, again, making something new gives us a certain simcha. That is, again, one of the most common issues which come up, and Rav Moshe deals with this. Most of the Rebbeinu's psukim are based in Rav Moshe. When it comes to expansion and construction, if you look at page 135, that's such a valuable sefer because he deals with things that are hard to draw out of Shulchan Aruch. So he points out that anything which is not necessary, one would not do during the 9 days. What does that mean? It means if one's plumbing isn't working, one fixes the plumbing. If one's water heater is not working, fixes the water heater. Whatever is necessary, if there's a hole in the wall, one fixes the hole in the wall. But if everything is functioning, but it's not so pretty. I could use another coat of paint. I could use wallpaper. I could use a carpet. So then that we would not do that during the 9 days. What the Shulchan Aruch calls a binyan shel simcha, something which is not necessary. Necessary stuff we do during the 9 days, but if it's not necessary, we would refrain from doing it. And that finally brings us to the practice of not listening to music during the 3 weeks. How did this practice come about? It's also hard to track down. So the simple approach is that music generates, is associated in our minds with simcha, with happiness, with parties. So therefore we don't have music during the 3 weeks. However, Rav Avadya Yosef suggests a different approach. He suggests that there was an old, there was a machlekes between Tosfos and the Rambam. The Gemara says that after Churban Bayis, after the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, we're not allowed to have any more zemer, any more song, any more music. So Tosfos says it doesn't mean you can't have music altogether. It means you can't go to a Beis Mishta which is not celebrating a simcha and have music there. You can't go to a pub and listen to music in a pub. You can't go to a party and enjoy the music and have music at a party. Unless it's a chasen, it's a sheva brach, it's a bar mitzvah, it's a simcha, it's a mitzvah. But if it's not a mitzvah, if it's just a party, then one cannot enjoy the music there. That's one suggestion of the Tosfos. And the Rambam, and that's we primarily follow, that the approach of Tosfos. The Rambam ever held that one cannot listen to music at all after Churban Bayis. And it's almost a prophetic Rambam, because the Rambam writes that one cannot listen to any instruments and not any mashmiei kol. It's very strange. He says that you can't use flutes and harps and any mashmiei kol. It wasn't sure what he meant. And in our terms, that would mean not live music. Mashmiei kol, any tape recorders or any CDs. So Rav Avadya Yosef suggests that what Kal Yisrael did is that during the 3 weeks, we said, you know, for 3 weeks we'll adopt the position of the Rambam. We'll take the stricter view. And that is that during the 3 weeks, we, as the Rambam conducted himself the entire year, Yerushalayim, until recently, Yerushalayim did not, you were not allowed to play music in Yerushalayim. And remember that the only time we had music in Yerushalayim was during Simchas Beis HaShoeva. And even weddings in Yerushalayim itself were only allowed percussion, only drums, but nothing else. Only during Sukkot would there be music at all in Yerushalayim. And I remember it's changed over the years, I don't know why, but when people were getting would get married, they would not, if they wanted to have music, they had to go to the newer parts of Yerushalayim, had to go to Beit Dagan. There you're allowed to have music, because that wasn't part of the original Yerushalayim. You certainly had to go to Ramot, because it wasn't part of the original Yerushalayim. But in Geula, in Beit Shearim, in Shari Chesed, I think also not. Anything that was Shmuel Salant, was around in Shmuel Salant's time, you couldn't, it changed. I don't know exactly why. Now you walk in the streets of Geula, and they have all the stores that are selling tapes and CDs are allowed to play them in the streets. And I don't know how that happened. But the approach was that at least in Yerushalayim we should keep the minhag of the Rambam. At least in Yerushalayim we should not have any music at all until we have the Beis Hamikdash once again. So just in summary, we have that if we take all the different ideas all the different behaviors that we refrain from during the 3 weeks and 9 days, and you figure it's probably around 10-11 behaviors. Not washing during the 9 days, and then washing clothes during the 9 days, and haircuts during the 3 weeks, and not wearing new clothes, and not attending, and not having chasenas, and not fixing things in the house, not tending to the house, and not making new clothes, and not having music, and not eating meat or wine, and not saying shechiyanu, and not taking on any additional. So it's 11 different behaviors that we refrain from during the 3 weeks and 9 days. Of the 3 weeks, it's no new clothes, we don't say shechiyanu, and haircuts, and tznucha mireyos, or chasenas, and then the balance are during the and music, and the balance are during the 9 days. So, but all of these 11 behaviors really are based on 4 different concerns. One concern is that it's not a good time for us, and it's a Yom Tzara. The idea that it's not a good time, it's a Yom Tzara, is not just a reason. This is so important to keep in mind. It's not just a reason to mourn; it's a reason to daven. That's these behaviors are behaviors to encourage us to daven much more during the mispal of the Yom Tzara, because Baruch Hu listens to our tefillos. That's what the halacha is, that in a difficult time, a Yom Tzara. So the Rambam writes, the mitzvah they rise to daven to the Rebbe Mishlom. If a person doesn't daven on a Yom Tzara, then there's a problem in one's emuna. Because when difficult times come, we're supposed to say the only issue is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So some of the behaviors that we have, which also indicate mourning, are to remind us that we are in days of Tzara, we're in a difficult time, and then to remind ourselves, and the only way out of this difficult time is bending misal to Ribbono Shel. And then there are several practices that we have adopted because they are al zecher hamikdash. They're very specific issues that remind us either of the Beis Hamikdash itself, or perhaps even more striking, they remind us of the reaction that the Jews had initially to loss of Beis Hamikdash. Because for us, it's very, very hard to appreciate what it means not to have a Beis Hamikdash. And if we, and it's part of the avoda of the 3 weeks, to think about those things. It's very hard for us to appreciate, remember last Tisha B'Av. So we began the kinnas by pointing out the Gemara. The Gemara says that Rachmanu Litzlan, if one loses a spouse, is ke'ilu nechrav Beis Hamikdash b'yamav. So I want to say, a person should realize Rachmanu Litzlan, a terrible thing is to lose a spouse. If you want to know how bad it is, so it's like losing the Beis Hamikdash. So I was thinking that we would say differently. We would say, if you want to know how terrible it is to lose the Beis Hamikdash, so think what kind of a tzara it is, right? But it means at that time they were so close to what it means not to have a Beis Hamikdash. It meant so much to them, and so much a part of the way they lived, that the ultimate tzara was, which they really felt in a palpable way, was not having a Beis Hamikdash. That's how far we are. We have a hard time feeling the pain of not having a Beis Hamikdash. And to my mind, the way that we have to encourage ourselves, the way we have to nurture our thoughts, is that during this period of time, when all the halachas that we're discussing, and the halachas that we're familiar with, they keep on reminding us of the 3 weeks, but what they should be reminding us is to stop for a moment to think a little bit. As busy as our days are, even if it's a few moments, of how things would be different when we have a Beis Hamikdash. How things would be, and we alluded to it in Shabbos, how the covenant of Klal Yisrael would be different. We have a Beis Hamikdash. How you take a moment to see how what bizyonis Klal Yisrael has nowadays. Bizyonis that we have. We don't think about it because we don't think in those terms. But it's not, we mentioned in Shabbos that Leyu Uman, that any other nation, it would be expected of them to give up an area which they have control, which has harbored a rebellious faction against the picture in any other country would be bizarre. So that is when you think about what we have in Harabais, that we have an Avodah Zarah in Harabais, maybe not technically an Avodah Zarah. Right, so this is, there are certain bizyonis which we can't express, because if we would carry them on our shoulders the entire year, we'd go into marashah, we'd go into depression. So we don't think about it. But during the 3 weeks, we're supposed to remind ourselves of that Klal Yisrael is suffering bizyonis that other nations didn't suffer. And to think about what the way things are supposed to be. It's supposed to be the exact opposite. It's supposed to be that other nations have tremendous chavod for us. that we have, other nations will come to us, like in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. He used to come to Shlomo HaMelech for advice. He used to come to him for guidance because of his wisdom. That's the way the world's supposed to be. When you think about what's supposed to be, how Yerushalayim is supposed to look, how the Eretika is supposed to look, how the coastal plaza is supposed to look. So those are the kinds of things that I find for myself during the 3 weeks, during the 9 days, that those are the kind of things that remind us of a little bit of what we're really missing. And if we're successful in reminding us a little bit of what we're missing, so that's how we can generate and encourage ourselves to daven. Because that's so much part of in this period of time. A velus and a yin tzara of tefillah. No. As Rosh Rab used to point out, this is a good way to end. Rosh Rab used to point out that we say, we should have mentioned this during the shir, we say that Mishinichnas of Mevate v'simcha. It doesn't say Mishinichnas of Ein Mesamchen, no simcha whatsoever. Mishinichnas of, when Ava comes in Mevate, we decrease the amount of simcha. The Jew has a certain amount of simcha he always lives with. Is the simcha of serving Kodesh Baruch Hu, the simcha of being able to daven, and the simcha of being the Yam Hashem, the Yam Segula. So the simcha of doing mitzvahs and serving Kodesh Baruch Hu, the simcha sachayim that a person has to have, but it's lessened. It's lessened a little bit. Alright?
As in here about not going to children's,
No, it says the other way around. What page?
Number 38.
Right. Good. So if.
So like a music class for
children. No.
If it's just a right, I think we're talking about different things. If it's a class where a child is learning, studying, so then
for toddlers, like singing little songs.
How old are they?
Two.
No,
the parents.
Yeah, the parents are not getting any. Any music that we're not focused on to enjoy the music. The person goes into the mall and hears music being piped through. That's not a problem. That's background music. But I think the way I understand this, and this is what I think in the footnotes he points out, and I refer to this very very often, which the number 38 in camp, in the summer camps, when questions come up. Is that anything which is used to keep the kids busy, that's not Katzimcha Mereyes. A party, an adult party, is where we get together, enjoy each other's friendship, enjoy spending time with each other, right? And then there's a festive atmosphere. You have a party for 4-year-olds, party for 5-year-olds. What's the party is a way to keep the kids occupied. That's another event, right? We call it a party, but in camp, I allow the kids to basically to watch, let's say, to watch a movie together. We allow them to have all sorts of different events. So you can tell me that, and it's true. The fact they're doing it together, they get more excitement out of it. They enjoy it much more. But all of these events are just ways of keeping kids busy. That's why if, for example, if counselors, we don't allow them to go to movies during the 3 weeks, because that's already an event. They're not just filling their time, they're going and having going as a group. So it's already more of a party kind of atmosphere. But to send the kids, so during the 3 weeks we allow it, because again, anything which is, what's the goal over here? The goal is to give them another event to keep them busy.
So is that the same as
listening
to music in the concert
kids? I think that if the alternative is that they'll be on top of each other and screaming, so that's the problem. That's to be okay. And if you can play things that only children like, it's usually aggravating to parents. certainly, okay.
The swimming, only because of the bathing, nothing to do with it being dangerous or anything like that?
I think so. You're pointing out it's correct. Some texts point out that they refrain from going swimming because of the additional risk. So some swimmers say that. So I thought that if a person is, when swimming does not introduce an additional risk, then the Easter is only because of bathing. Right? So that's why in camp also, we have a rule that we don't allow any kids to move up beyond their skills during the 9 days. Right? For example, let's say a kid never took a boat out. Not during the 9 days. During the rest of the summer, he can take a certain test, and if he passes, has the skills, he'd go on. Let's say if a kid has not gone to the deep water yet. So any other time during the summer, takes a test and goes into the deep water, not during the 9 days. During the 9 days, even though we will not allow him to go into the deep water without taking the test and prove his proficiency, but that's an additional risk. So we don't allow that. So I'd say I would think the same thing when it comes to swimming. If a person's a swimmer, they swim. And I don't think of swimming as an additional risk. So then I think it's just a question of bathing. But there are people who do say it the way you say it.
So if a person swims, let's say not for fun and bathing, but strictly exercising.
The person swims just has a regimen of exercising. And the swimming is their exercise, and that's what works for them. So I would think that it's okay until Shavuot Shacholva, until the week of Tisha B'Av itself. But I think the litmus test is, when was the last time they didn't swim? As if a person, if things come up, they don't swim, right? If their schedule is such that they will go a week without swimming because they're very busy, then I would say, but if a person is religious about it, they swim all the time. And again, the reason why I said it is because we all know that we all find different exercises which work, which don't work. So a person could say, oh, so this week you won't, so this week you run. No, it doesn't work for everybody. So if it's a real exercise regimen and a person keeps to it, and time pressures and other things have not really pushed it aside, so then I think that until Shavuot Shacholva, because the reason you're saying, because this is not Rechisa Shel Tanug, right? But, and similarly, if a person is learning how to swim, same thing, it's not a Rechisa Shel Tanug, that we should be okay. That's a good question. When is Shavuot Shacholva? Is the machlokes whether Shavuot Shacholva is the entire week or there is no Shavuot Shacholva? It's not. The Shulchan Aruch quotes both positions, so it would depend on the particular issue which way you go. So in this case, I would take the Molina view.
What about music, like a Walkman or something that's used for exercise purposes, like?
Right, so I would think that during the, till the 9 days, I think it would also be permissible. Until the 9 days, again, the point of the music there is to keep the, it's not for simcha. I know when a person is sweating it out on the treadmill, and doesn't feel like dancing, but it's just a way of relieving the terrible boredom of being on the treadmill. So it's like a negative, so it shouldn't be terribly bored. So during the 3 weeks, I would certainly feel comfortable with it. Right. Why? Again, we in this case, what we're saying is that we're not following Rav Yosef's approach. But Rav Yosef is a very pretty approach. But that's, I'm not saying everybody follows that approach. Most see the aversion of music because of simcha. Right. And in this case, it's not there to provide simcha. During the 9 days, I have to, if there's no other alternative, I have to think about it some more. Rav Shechter has said that a cappella music is also permissible during the 9 days. So I don't encourage the position because nowadays a cappella is so pretty. So, but nevertheless, but in situations where it's important, there's some kind of music that can be a possible aid.
During 9 days?
So the our approach would be that if we need it to get clean, then it's permissible. So that means that if a person without shampoo will feel that their hair is dirty and greasy, then that's not tainug, that is to avoid discomfort. So then you have to just think about it more. In other words, let's say if a person is showering, take an extreme example, a person is showering for the third time that day, right? So then they don't need to use shampoo that day, right? Let's say they shower in the morning with shampoo, and then they went on the treadmill, something like that. So then you have to think about it. You know, is it really necessary? It could be that a person would do it, would use shampoo less frequently. Right? But it depends on each, on their own, it might depend on how long the hair is. But the point is that if one is using it to avoid aggravation, to avoid discomfort, then it's permissible. If one's using it, one will be comfortable. That's adding greater comfort, then we should avoid it. So I would say the same thing, that see when it's always allowed, be careful, during the 9 days one should be clean, right? And one should not feel uncomfortable. Right? The point is that we can do it without the comfort that we normally use. We can do it with lukewarm water. We can do it with spot washing. So that's, I'm not sure they say. During the 90s also, a person is allowed to spot wash, and they should spot wash, right? But we don't do it the same way we do it the rest of the, in the, what is not the three in the 9 days, so we do it barachav under a hot shower and comfortably. In the 9 days, so we do it in a less comfortable way, with a washcloth, and we don't stand in the shower, but when it still should be clean and should be comfortable, just the shower is less comfortable. But afterward, a person will feel. We think about it more. We make a judgment call. Do I need a shower now? It's in the rest of the year. Don't think about it. We have part of our routine. So Mitzray Tishra, the same thing. It should be clean. It should be comfortable. So one can accomplish it in a way which is, while when a shower will be less comfortable.
If somebody for work uses certain clothing, before the 9 days,
that
they don't have, it just works out that they're going
to stay clean.
They work out the what?
Have
an ad, you know, like
right.
Like,
right.
Have them all clean before.
Right.
But what if he runs out in the middle?
And you have to wash them, yes. Best thing is to have a guy wash in that case. So certainly for hygienic reasons.
It's
for hygienic reasons, and that's really the hetzer for Shabbos as well. Right, we wash clothes for Shabbos only if we need them for Shabbos. There, the issue of need is important. Right, for adults, the issue of need is important.
I have a question. First of all, can a goy do household cleaning for you during the night?
A goy should not. Again, if something's dirty, then you can clean it, and a goy can clean it. Right, but if it's just that the house is not as good shape as it usually is, then we wouldn't do it. On Tishba itself, I would think one should not do it unless the baby is uncomfortable or something.
Well, it's more of the convenience. Obviously, you're not going to bathe them on Shabbos. If you don't bathe them Sunday, then you're waiting again for Monday.
For convenience, I wouldn't do it. If the child's uncomfortable, you're afraid that they'll get a rash, then for sure, one should do it. Shabbos, yeah. Shabbos, Kiyad Rafa Shomer Melech was allowed to enjoy Shabbos as a regular Shabbos. When Shabbos is Tisha B'Av, so then the Shoshudas we hold back and refrain. But interestingly, the first two meals we can have ready. That was a debate that we find in the Shulchan Aruch and Rambam. Whether one wears Big Day Shabbos and Shabbos Chazon or not. So the Ramah writes that we do not wear Bigdei Shabbos. Ramah begrudgingly said that you can change one of your one shirt. You can change one thing for Shabbos. But he didn't wear Bigdei Shabbos and Shabbos Chazon. And the Vilna Gaon said, no, Shabbos is Shabbos. You can wear Bigdei Shabbos. There's an ongoing debate. The Aruch HaShulchan explained that it really wasn't a debate. The Aruch HaShulchan explained that styles of clothes changed. In the most time, people wore the same kind of clothing in Shabbos and Chol. So they had a kilu, a suit that they wore all week, and a Shabbos suit. So in that case, it didn't look that much differently in Shabbos. So then, that's how the Aruch HaShulchan went Shabbos. But in the Gero's time, people wore, wore clothes, and in Shabbos they looked differently. So then he said, you have to wear Shabbos. So our practice is that we treat Shabbos, it's a regular Shabbos.
Could you expand on the idea of trying on your clothes?
Just this before.
Minutes,
yeah. Because the idea of clean clothes is exactly freshly laundered. The idea of clean clothes is the Easter of wearing clean clothes is because they're almost like new. That's why. The good feeling that one has when one wears new clothes. So if the clothes have been worn already before, they're already losing that crackle of new clothing and the fresh clothes. So again, to put them on for 3 seconds, I don't think it makes a difference, but put them on for 20 minutes before, so then it doesn't have the same freshness.
But that's subjective, meaning if you've had the shirt for years, it comes out of the laundry, it's not sweaty anymore,
but you don't feel special about it. Yeah. Okay, I was still thinking.
Something new, is it a subjective feeling of fresh and new, or is it,
you know, you have to... The question is a good question. I think the way halachas is formulated in this case, it's more not subjective in this case. Okay, thank you very much for the opportunity to review these halachas.